everybody. Welcome back to Second Act with me, Bonnie Somerville. You may have noticed that is a different opening than we normally have. Not sure if everybody knows this, but the song in the beginning of my podcast, which is Dave playing guitar, by the way. Yay, Dave. I love you. It is my song, Winding Road, from the Garden State soundtrack. Some of you might not know this, but my first act in my entertainment, whatever, world was I was a singer-songwriter. I had a record deal when I was 18, got dropped, moved to LA, got another one when I was 22, at Interscope, got dropped again, and just got so disheartened I just couldn't do it anymore, but I've been in a million bands, so that is also part of my soul, is singing, songwriting, and music. So basically, long story, longer, heard this guy's story, couldn't believe it. We were like, this is insane. This is an unbelievable second act story. We have to get in touch with him. And we did. And he agreed to do the podcast. And I don't want to give away the story. You have to listen to it. But it's truly a second act story that you never know. Life can change in a second. And this is a person who is so true to himself, true to his art, true to what he believes in. Super inspiring. I could have talked to him for honestly 3 hours. So proud that I was able to interview him. Also, by the way, first guest I've ever had that I did not know. So new for me. And he's just an awesome dude and so inspiring. His name is Thad Cockrell. That song is called Swingin'. I hope you love this as much as I do.
Okay, I'm really excited and slightly nervous. This is the first time I've ever had a real rock, country, blues, gospel, Baptist musician, songwriter. You name it, he does it. Superstar.
On my I don't know about the Baptist thing, but
my tiny little podcast is like an actual rock star. Thad Cockrell, nice to meet you.
Really nice to meet you too, Bonnie. Yeah,
Thanks for having me. Are you, where are you right now? Are you in Nashville or North Carolina?
I'm in snowy Nashville.
Wow. I'm jealous.
Yeah, I mean, the town is locked down. I don't think there's two snowplows in all of Nashville. And we've got like 6 inches of snow over the last few days. And it's been cold enough that it's stuck, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it is basically a huge play day for the entire city when this happens.
I am so jealous of that. Mm-hmm. I really wish we got snow. Although we are going skiing soon, so we'll get some snow up Northern Cali.
Oh, awesome. Where are you going?
We are going to Mammoth for my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes, my lovely fiance is taking me skiing, which I haven't been in 8 years, and I'm really nervous because he's an expert skier. But
I went skiing for the first time in 8 years. About 2 weeks ago. It was already planned, but as soon as I got done, this sounds like it's such a weird sentence. It sounds so douchebaggy. As soon as I got done tonight show.
That's a great line. As soon as I got done with the tonight show.
All right. I know it's
what your Hummer limo whisked you up to.
It sounds so bad. It's
no,
like,
it doesn't.
But it's an honest sentence, but it's not missed on me how ridiculous it sounds. So anyways, I had already planned to go to snow skiing because it's like my favorite thing to do in the world is snow ski and snowboard. So I flew back from New York and like maybe 10 hours later flew out to Steamboat Springs for like a week. And it was
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I've never been to Steamboat Springs. I also have never been on the Tonight Show. Speaking of which, I mean, I guess we could open with that and like work backwards. Like,
no, we don't have to. We can.
That's, I mean, you probably get asked this now every second, but I mean, Dave saw it first, you know, on Twitter and watched it and saw it and was like, "You have to see this guy. You have to hear the song." And then I watched the whole thing and I was like, I mean, it is one of the best stories ever, right? Like, I mean, I had a couple of record deals when I was young, and I never had a song play in a hardware store, so I guess that's why I got dropped.
Well, you know, I think you know you've got it made when you're walking through a hardware store and you hear your song. On some level, that's there is
No, it's true. I did hear my song once from I have a song on the Garden State soundtrack, and I heard it once at CVS.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, it was like,
it's
a kind
of, it's the same thing.
Kind of, but CVS is a little more depressed. I feel like CVS is more depressing, and a hardware store has some, I love hardware stores, especially.
Yeah, but having a song on the Garden State soundtrack might be one of the cool, because that's one of the greatest soundtracks in all soundtracks.
That was an unbelievable experience. Again, another many act, but like, I just can't, I mean, how did you get that call? Like, how did he reach out? How did Jimmy Fallon reach out?
His team reached out to my manager, and they called me up and you know, told me on the phone. It's funny, because just that morning I had sent them like a long list of things to do. And I don't want to say it was a shot across the bow of the boat, but it was kind of like, this might be where they're like, hey, we've done what we can do, you know, thanks, yeah. Which would have honestly been completely fine. I just, you know, I think at some point you have to, when things are so unclear, you have to make really, for me, definitive decisions to move forward, and you start doing that, and then you let God, the universe, however you want to define it, start giving you really hard yeses or nos, you know. And they called me back like 2 hours later. It was like a long list of things to do. I've been making a lot of music over the lockdown, and I'm like, hey, here's what I am doing this year. I'm releasing all this music, and here's, you know, like, it was a lot. It was a long laundry list of stuff. And they called me like 2 hours later, and like, hey, we actually don't want to talk to you about the list of stuff that you gave us to do. We want to tell you that, like, Jimmy Fallon heard your song, and it's been like become an anthem to him. And you're going to be playing the Tonight Show on the 26th, and you're going, you know, you're going to be playing with the Roots, and you know, just the day before, I was writing down my goals and intentions for the year, you know, and on like number four down the list was look for a new career. And it was really truly like a surrender,
really?
You know, like I mean, if you do art, you quit all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I quit every day, every day.
So there's nothing really new, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's doing art for a living, no matter what it is you're doing, really is a fool's errand, you know? Yeah. And at some point you get over the ego, like that burns away at some point. And then you're left with, okay, well, then why am I doing this? And I think then it becomes a matter of like deep purpose, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, I love that you I love that you write down your goals and intentions. I do that too. And I've had those moments of like not just giving up on the manifestation of stuff. And I could just, it all spirals downward. Like if you don't continue to stay in that place, you just spin out. And I've just gotten, you know, totally completely down. But I love that you do that, and that you actually like this, the universe was like, okay, here you go. And the song had been out though for a while, right?
A long time. I mean, I wrote this song. I mean, the story of this whole album is like just crazy. I started it in 2016.
Just so everyone knows, it's called Going Down Swinging, right? Or Swinging.
No, the name of the album is called If In Case You Feel the Same.
If In Case You Feel the Same, but the song is Swinging?
It's called Swinging.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say Going Down Swinging or Swinging.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Yeah. It's an amazing song, by the way, everybody. Well, it's number one on the iTunes chart. So it's did pretty.
Yeah. At one point,
I think
was,
people
yeah,
know about it.
Yeah.
It's an anthem song.
Yeah. I mean, it was clearly a song I needed to hear. It was me fighting my own cynicism and my own disbelief. And, you know, you can't make great art begrudgingly.
Hmm.
You know, you have to like, you have to really, you have to do whatever it is you do. You have to do it as though it's made you just whatever you believe it could make you, like, you know, whether you're in it for power, money, fame, whatever, like, if you know, like, I've never really made money on music, right? But I have to make music that sounds as though it's made all my dreams come true. Otherwise, it sounds, you hear the energy in it.
That's, you know? So true. My God, that's so true. I talk about that with acting too. I've had so many periods of my life where I'm just bitter and, you know, angry, or I didn't get this job. And then I'm like, begrudgingly is the best word. And I've completely just, my heart isn't in it. And everyone knows, and they smell it when you walk in the room.
Oh man.
And it's like a stink. It's
like immediately. And you know, the opposite of it is, you know, like I do this daily exercise where every morning I write down something I'm grateful for. Just one thing. It could be anything, right? It could be,
I just
like,
started doing that again, actually.
Toes.
Right.
Yeah. It could be any, right. I just think that gets you out of like a mindset, of thinking that it isn't working the way you want it to, you know, like,
So you really, you know, were at a place where you were after, I mean, you've had such an amazing songwriting career. You've been doing it for so long. You really got to,
I've never made any money on it. I hate to say it. It's never afforded me any real kind of life. So it has been like a long, long road. And really it's as much the story of other people as it is me, because the only way I get to this point is because of, I'm surrounded by the most incredible friends. I feel like I'm like the Jeff Bezos of friends. I'm not kidding you. It's just incredible.
That's pretty fortunate. That really helps.
I think actually we all are, if we like open our eyes, you know, I think we'd be surprised. I think it also, for me, it took, you know, I don't know. Have you ever heard of the Enneagram?
Yeah.
Do you have you done any like work, like, you know what your number is or anything?
No, I did some of it. Cause I used to have a friend that was really into it, but I don't really remember it at all.
It's an incredibly helpful tool for like understanding yourself and people. It helps you really. What's better about it than like all the other personality type things is that it shows what you look like in disintegration. You know what I mean? Like when you're not in a good place. So if you have like a significant other or somebody you work with, and you can find out what number they are, and if they're in disintegration, it can really help you understand where they're at, and also use the right language with them so that you're not like using the wrong language. Oh, right,
Dave, we need that. I mean, it's like the love language thing.
It's better than that. I've done
but I like the word disintegration. I feel like I've been in some sort of form of disintegration
we all have, right? But you know, but I'm like an 8-7 on the Enneagram, and an 8 is like, they usually are like, if they're healthy, you actually want them to have a lot of power because it isn't about them. They're justice oriented and they want to use it to help a lot of people. Hmm. But if they're unhealthy, it's, they're the ones that like push like nuclear bombs. You know what I mean? They just blow people up because it's all about them. So they feel like they're they take everything personally. And so they fight personally. Right. But I say all that to say, you know, eights, we really like to help people, but like to be vulnerable enough to ask for help is like,
yeah.
Wild.
Yeah, that's, you know, hard. Like that's hard for me. That's hard.
It's
for
a
me.
Pressure point, right? Yeah. And I know at times in my life I've had to ask like literally ask my friends for help. And sometimes that's financial.
Oh, I know the feeling. It's the worst.
Oh, it's the worst. But I don't think anybody talks about it. It's the worst. But you know what I found out through all of it is just how incredibly loved I am and how supported I am. And I just, it makes my story so much bigger than me.
Yeah. Well, you have the most amazing attitude. I mean, I love talking to you. You have the most amazing energy. Gratitude. You're full of full of gratitude. I can feel it like coming through the screen of the computer.
Well, my ego wants to tell everybody to F off and I don't need anyone.
Me too.
You know, if I could do it the way I wanted to, I would never need anyone and I would do it all myself. And I would have written a hit at some point that would have made me $1 billion and I would have done everything on my own. And how small that story would have been.
Right. And now this story, I mean, obviously and this is like the whole podcast, you know, Second Act is basically about me hitting like rock bottom in every way. And my friends
tell me about that.
I had such a long career, you know, music, acting. I couldn't not get a job for about 15 years. I mean, I was the girl, everyone was like, oh, Bonnie, she's always working. And then just got fired from a show, which never happened to me before, you know, turned 40, kind of had a midlife crisis about that. Relationship didn't work out, didn't end up getting married, didn't have a baby. And I just kind of got so depressed. I just thought, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I just can't take one more rejection. I can't take one more canceled show. I can't take one more relationship. And I just got to this place and my girlfriend was like, you just got to find your second act, man. Like, come on, you know, you moved out at 17 years old. You've been doing all this stuff. And it just hit me like everyone has one, even if it's getting up in the morning and having coffee when you're really depressed. You know, like I've suffered from depression. I've had depression where, you know, getting up and taking a shower is a good day.
Yeah. And took all of your energy.
All of my energy just to get up, take a shower and like call my mom and, you know, be in tears, calling her in New York. And she, you know, her saying, you know what, just get up, take a shower, go for a walk. And like, I know people that suffer from, you know, depression and mental health issues. And that is a big accomplishment.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's massive.
And this for you, I don't even like to say second act. I mean, this is like what, the 200th act, but this is a big one.
Well, you know, it's just a continuation of a journey, really, you know, and you know, it's so interesting. I think what there's a few things that are like, if I could like zoom out of my own story and just kind of watch what's happening, I would say it's a story of perseverance and surrender, but you don't persevere alone. Like, you know, you don't do it. So it isn't about one person. And I do think that the world, although it doesn't feel like it, the world is being healed slowly. And oftentimes we need different stories in order for people to find, oh my God, there's a new, that can happen. That's a new path. And I think why it resonated with so many people is all this, there's so many people that are stuck. And, you know, you hear the story of early success so much, but you rarely hear the story of late success.
I know. I always say that, like overnight success. I always fantasize about when I get that big job that's finally going to get me to the place that I wanted to, you know, that you're an overnight success that's been working for 25 years. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think what might be more compelling is late success, because few people stick around for it, you know, because there's just so much doubt that you have to overcome. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that are walking the same path that I am in their own way. And when this happened, it felt like a win for them. Like when I came back home to Nashville, like it's, you know, I'll go out and, you know, my friends who I know, they want to talk to me. And it, they talk to me as though it's happened to them, and it has. Like, it really, there's like a vindication that they feel. Hell, I feel it, right?
Of course.
Yeah, but it's
it's true too, because so many people, also society, I always say, I mean, well, women, you know, more often, it's like
more often, absolutely.
Totally marginalized after like 25 years old. Like, I was a model.
It's horrible.
Yeah. And then even as an actor, I mean, it has changed. Thank God the acting world has gotten so much better, but later success is so frowned upon. And then you read all these stories and you're like, this one, you know, created this. This one did this at four. I mean, Margaret Atwood wrote Handmaid's Tale at 40 something years old. I mean, it's like,
a chef doesn't become a damn thing until his 40s.
Yeah. And that's considered correct.
And then in his 50s, he's like really like dialing in what he is doing.
Right.
Like, it becomes. And so I just think we need a lot more stories of people, you know, finding their brilliance and you know,
because life is long. Like, who
life
said
is
that?
Long.
Why do
it's
we always, it's
got to
be by 25. Like, what?
Right.
I was like a fetus at 25. Literally.
Yeah.
I was absolutely clueless. Even at 35.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I think that, like, I am writing songs that I could not have. There's a craft to what I'm doing. And so I am writing songs that I could not have written when I was 25. I'm writing songs that like a 22-year-old, as good as they are, can't write. And it has nothing to do, it has everything to do with like, and vice versa, right? And so I think what we all need to do is just shine so bright so that we cast vision for younger people to not be so freaked out about finding early fame, about trying to be so lured by, money, wealth, fame, all these things. And they can just, like, my nephew, he's 21, 22, and he's about to graduate from college. And I'm like, hey, like, you don't need to be married. You know, if you like, these are what all the things that I was thinking when I was your age.
Yeah.
If I can't find someone at college, I'm not going to find someone. I should know what I'm doing in life.
Yeah.
I should do all these things. And I'm like, they're all complete. They're all lies and myths. And
that's kind of why I hit that depression phase, was because I thought I was going to be a certain place. And I was told I was going to be at a certain place. And I was told, you're going to have this, you're going to do this, you're going to win. And then all of a sudden, everything kind of falling apart at 40, it hit me so hard, because I believed that bullshit, that if I wasn't married, I didn't have a baby, I didn't have a hit show, I never made it to the cover of a magazine, I didn't win any awards. I bought into that. I bought into it. Like, it's over for you. It's over.
So let me ask you, coming to that point, what all did it heal?
What did it heal?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It just forced me to do so much self reflecting and go back to therapy and like really work and work on myself. And I just got engaged in November. I'm 46 years old. And I had said,
congratulations.
Thank you. I literally said, right before the pandemic, I was like, you know what, Mom, it's just not meant for me. Like, I'm just not, I don't think it's going to happen for me. And I had really come to peace with it. And I had really, really come to peace with that. It might not happen. And the second I did, I met Dave. But I was at peace with it, as opposed to in the past saying I didn't care, which wasn't true.
Yeah, different. I don't care is never true.
No, that's not true. I was really like, I could be alone. I'm good alone. And then I meet the love of my life, who is the most supportive person I've ever been with, helping me do this. You know, my career is coming back. Everything is getting back, kind of, but in a way that's so different now. You know, it's it's not desperate now. I'm not desperate now, because I've hit rock bottom, you know?
I think like, do you think that there is a possibility that when you talk about like healing, that it was about you realizing that you don't have to perform and that who you are is absolutely more than enough?
I love that saying. I have a necklace that It just, I just had it made for myself. It says, "You are enough."
Yeah.
Because it's like, now I'm going to forget his name. He's one of my, oh, Mark Rylance, one of my favorite British actors. He was in Wolf Hall. He's absolutely brilliant. He did an interview. I think it wasn't for the Actor's Studio. It was for something in England. And he's just a masterful, never chased fame. I mean, could care less, you know, just does what he does. And they asked him if you could give advice to any of these young kids, actors, what would you say? And that's all he said. He said, "You are enough."
Oh yeah.
Because artists, we don't ever feel, most of us, we never feel like we're enough. I think it's,
you think just it's just do. Artists?
No, you're actually, no, a lot of people, but I think
it's everyone.
Artists.
I think moms don't feel like they're enough. Dads don't feel like they're enough. Entrepreneurs don't feel like they're enough.
That's,
I think,
so
we all, I think we, there's a huge like lie that happens. You know, it's interesting. I was talking with a friend yesterday, and I said, you know, and I know that like wealth is one thing, but and there's I have a lot of friends with a lot of money, so this could be like very inflammatory, but I do think that we only get one go around on this whole thing, right? And there is enough to go around, not just for Americans, but for the whole world, right? And I think that sometimes there's people who they're so wounded that they need to have that much more than the next person in order to feel validated in their life. And unfortunately, we've called that success.
God, you are unbelievable. I want you to write a book or leave me voice notes every single morning and I can listen to you. You are like, seriously, so wise. So
well, I'm not, these are things I think about. It's my job, right?
I know.
I've got to pay attention. Like it is my job as a songwriter to echo back, right? Like I need to listen. I need to look. I need to watch. I'm just watching. There's nothing wise. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing. And what's worse is I grew up in church, right?
Yes.
So my dad was a pastor. Both my brothers are pastors. I grew up in church. And here's what's even more. Oh man, I don't know the right word for it, but in church we call it blessings.
Mm.
Which means that God blesses some or he favors some, but he doesn't others. And it's just, wherever the pit of hell is, that's where that lie comes from. You know what I mean? So we need new language. We have to find new language, you know, to create a new.
Yeah. Wait a second. We're going to hang on one second, because I want to go back to the pastor thing. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. This is amazing. I want to talk for a quick sec about our newest sponsor, eBay. You guys know you can get practically anything on eBay, but did you know it's basically the original sneaker marketplace? You can find the exact shoe you're looking for. And with eBay's authenticity guarantee, you know you're getting shoes that have been meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. They verify the box, logo, stitching, and tons of other inspection points. Each sneaker comes with an authenticity guarantee tag and a digital stamp of authenticity. And you sneaker sellers, you guys are protected with a verified return process. And right now they've eliminated selling fees on shoes over $100, making it free to sell or flip your collection. And by the way, I'm a women's size 9. If you want to send me some, my birthday's coming up in 2 weeks, just saying. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. Okay, so we're back with that. And basically, for you guys that don't know, I'm just going to give a little condensed version, or maybe you can help me give a condensed version of amazing songwriter, album out, been writing Nashville all forever, written with so many people, had albums. And then one day, Jimmy Fallon is in a hardware store and he Shazams a song.
Yeah.
And boom.
Yeah. Unknowingly to me, you know, I've made this record And it had been done for a year and a half. And the label kept pushing it back. I got in a huge fight with like the head of the label. I was like, listen, if you don't love this album, if you're not passionate about it, just give it back to me. Like, no hurt feelings, but I'm not going to like, he's like, no, I promise you, we're super passionate about it. We're just trying to find it. Priority. I'm like, so you're telling me at one point, this is going to be y'all's one album that you're going to work. He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll wait. Right. I'm not a patient person, but I'll wait for that. Right. So,
I love that you even said that though. God, I don't want to interrupt you, but I love that you even had the balls to say that, but go on. So you say like, is it my album or what? And then he says, yes.
And he's like, so I'm like, okay, let's pick a date. We're not moving it back anymore. Let's do it. The date was June 26th. Unknowingly to us, we picked the middle of the pandemic. So June 26th comes, or about 3 months out, they're like, hey, like, we might want to think about pushing this back until after. And I'm like, no way. I'm like, this album was looking for a fight, clearly, and it hasn't. Like, and that's what's going on here. And, you know, when I made this album, it's a real album, right? And so it has a beginning, there's an arc to it, and then there is an ending. It starts with, If In Case You Feel The Same, part one. You hear this, all the songs, and then it finishes with If In Case You Feel The Same, part two, right? And so, you know, and the popular speak now these days is like, you know, singles, nobody's listening to albums. But I think that's speaking down to your audience, because it doesn't think enough of them to have longer, you know, attention span of like 30 seconds. Yeah. And I think that's cynical. To believe that, you know, it's like when people say, don't put books in that library because those kids will never understand Walt Whitman. You're like, put Walt Whitman in those damn libraries. Like,
Someone will find it.
Yeah. And it'll change the world. Right. So, you know, this is my small act of rebellion. So I make an album. It comes out in the middle of it. And for like 2 or 3 months, everybody that's loved my music was really excited about it. But at some point, if it doesn't break out, it becomes an echo chamber unto itself. And
yeah,
that's kind of what had happened. So it was basically like flatlined, like the album was dead, done. And I worked harder on this album than anything I'd ever worked on. The musicians were absolutely brilliant that worked on it. The producer, Tony Berg, like they all work on like the best of the best albums. And Brittany Howard from the Alabama Shakes is singing on one of the songs.
Love her.
And so it's just an incredible thing, but it was done. And then get a phone call from Jimmy saying, you know, that he'd been listening. And this is like so encouraging that I would like to, people you understand is while I was defeated, I had no idea that of all people, one of my favorite like people, although I hate to describe him as a TV personality, although that's what, you know, for lack of a better term, I just think he's so incredible how he enjoys people.
And he's also a musician.
He's a musician and like a
passionate
real
musician.
Passionate. Like he loves music. Neil Young.
Oh,
like I'm
yeah.
like, this guy gets music, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And little did I know it, he was been listening. The whole story is it's the song called Go Down Swinging. If you're gonna go down swinging. And what Jimmy did, there's like playing on the Tonight Show. And what normally happens when you play on the Tonight Show is, you know, it's awesome and your tribe gets to celebrate something. It's a big show or any of the late night shows. But what happens is, you know, they do the whole episode and then they say, and our musical guest is whoever it is. And then you play and that's kind of it. Nothing like that happened, like not even close. Jimmy started talking about it. I was playing on a Tuesday. He talked about it for 3 minutes. On national TV.
I know. Friday. I was fascinated. I watched the whole thing. I was riveted.
I watched the whole thing and I was like, what is going on here? And then he kept talking about it. And then he basically made a whole episode. And then for the next 4 or 5 days, he kept talking about it. Right. And, And I'm like thinking about this. I'm like, that is, I don't understand. And I'm like, this had to have hit him on like a personal level.
Well, you know, if you guys have, listening to this, you could just YouTube it, or it's on Twitter everywhere. You could just YouTube it and you can see that it definitely hit him. Like it was cause he was like, yeah, man. Yeah, man. Because like, you know what, when you get down, you're going to go down swinging, right? Like we've all been there, man. Like, and that resonated with me about talking to you because I've been swinging my whole freaking life. Like literally birth. I'm like, I'm not going to go down. So this song ended up really being an anthem about your life.
Well, yeah, but I think it's about like the album is if in case you feel the same.
Right.
Right. So in the middle of the album is a mirror. So when you pick it up, you see yourself. Oh. So it's a music about they're songs for us. Right. And so it isn't just it's like the cross section of the art that I try to make is I don't want to make music just for me because it feels selfish. I don't want to make music just for you because that can be cynical because then I'm always playing to the lowest common denominator. So I want to try to create a third and that third is us. Right. And so but what's amazing is I've thought about it is the Monday before I played, it was the fourth lowest rating in Tonight Show history.
Wow.
And it's to Jimmy's credit because everyone else is doubling down on the cynicism of the world. And believe me, I didn't vote for Trump. But when we call him names and we do that kind of stuff, yeah. We are the opposite. We are the opposite side of the same coin. And I think we should use that energy to speak something good into the world. Right. And so it doesn't mean that you can't, like, I think Jimmy gave very heartfelt, like when the thing with the Capitol happened, he was very heartfelt about how he disagreed with what's going on. I think you can do that. I think you can be very passionate about your disagreements. Right.
It's like but Jimmy Kimmel start, as well.
And I have fallen victim to this. So this is me when I've started doing this, I'm like, hang on. I don't feel any, like if I start giving them the same thing that I don't like, then I have become the same thing. Right. And I think what happens is, you know, like I love Colbert and a lot of these other shows, but they're kind of doubling down on it. And Jimmy hasn't done it and it's hit him. It's like hit them because you need commercials. You need, and I'm sure this is, and I could be all wrong. This is speculation, complete speculation. But I'm sure whenever the ratings aren't going as well as they once were, we don't think of him as human being, but I'm guessing he might be thinking, I don't know if they got the right job, the right guy for this job, because I know what you have to do in order to keep like advertising and ratings up. And I'm not that person. And I think when he heard that song, the energy that I was putting into it for me and for us, I think it actually connected. I think it was like deeply, he was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Well, it did connect to me too. I mean, this song totally resonates with me. I mean, yeah. I've had so many downs and I feel exactly the same way about that song. Just man, no, you know, like I'm not, you know.
And I need to clarify, I don't know all that. That's speculation, right? But you know, I'm just trying to like think, why in the world? Because he was so generous, so incredibly generous.
How was it like performing with the Roots and practicing with the Roots and like what was the experience like just being there? With all those, I mean, the Roots, I love the Roots.
It was as genius as you could ever, like, whatever.
Listen guys, you don't know what you're doing. Just, it's like riding a bike, follow me, do what I do.
Well, you know, listen, I really do believe that God is in the details. Mm-hmm. And I think the devil's in the lack of them, you know, but, you know, if I could have taken the best band from Nashville, the absolute best band, And even my friends who are like, you know, they're the best musicians and they've played on late night things, right? But maybe three or four times in their life, they would have still on some level had deer in the headlights, even as great as they are, because of what's going on. And like, but what was incredible is like the Roots, they've done this thing so many times. That they're like so comfortable with it. And I can be so empathetic that if I feel someone else, like someone else in the band being unsure, I'm like, oh shit, I feel it.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't need that. I need everyone to know their shit. So all I have to do is just go up and like plug into the megawatts of like joy, levity, whatever I'm supposed to plug into and just like channel that. And that's what I was able to do. They were just, they're so good. And what they did to that song, like, you know, Kurt, the guitar player, some of the guitar, like he added, like they'd been rehearsing the week before and he was like, he added like guitar parts that weren't in the record that are like so dope. I'm like, it's,
isn't that amazing when that happens? I mean, I have no comparison to you. You're absolutely brilliant and way above me. But my one little song, Winding Road, that I wrote for Garden State, I've had people cover it and send me, you know, YouTube or messages, or it was their wedding song, or like 13-year-old girls playing it. Because it is a song, again, Winding Road. It was about me moving to LA, being a young actress, you know, broke, waiting tables, having nothing, feeling so depressed, and just being like, someday I'm going to find my way home, and dreaming about a house in the hills. And but when people, when I've seen people cover that song, or young girls, or people, and some musicians taking it and making it way better than my four chords, you know, it is, I can't imagine for you, because you're so much more talented. And
no, you have to stop. Can you not? I just don't.
All right.
I think we are all appropriately brilliant. Like, I think brilliance that you needed to bring to that in your moment, you did. Well, its way. Yeah.
Thank you. But the feeling of hearing someone taking it to a next level, there have been times where I've literally burst into tears when I've
me too.
Seen people say this was our wedding song, or I played this at my mom's funeral because it's about finding your way home, or and I'm like, my little song that I wrote when I was like this little baby, you know, broke musician, got dropped from Interscope, you know, had nothing. It just is the most profound feeling in the world. And you just got to do, you're doing that now. You've always done it, but now can you imagine so many more millions of people? I mean, that is such a beautiful thing to give to the world.
Yeah. It's a lot of dreams come true.
It is. And you deserve it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I feel that.
And
yeah.
You do deserve. And what are you doing now? So what are you working on, another album now? Are you taking a break?
Yeah, I'm already working on all the albums. All the ex-girlfriends have reached out. I'm working on.
Hey, listen, that happened to me too. My first.
Isn't it weird? It's
bananas, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that you just said that.
How did you feel about that?
Damn right. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
I had nothing but naysayers. I grew up in Brooklyn. I didn't, you know, nobody was an art. Nobody was an artist. Nobody. I had nothing but naysayers my entire life. And like, she's crazy. And oh, you're going to go to LA. Yeah, right. And I was on Friends at the time, which was the biggest show on earth. And it was the amount of ex-boyfriends that reached out. I was like, holy shit. Like, this is unbelievable. Especially one of the guys that like, broke up with me, broke my heart, cheated on me, and told me I had to move out by the end of the month. And I had like nothing. I had nowhere to go. My mom actually flew to LA, got me an apartment, got me some stuff from IKEA. He wanted to go out with me again. I was like, what?
You know, it's interesting. The one of the only people that I ever thought I was going to marry, her parents were very wealthy. And they basically didn't force her. I mean, she's a grown woman, but was like, hey, he's not going to be able to afford the life that we have, you know, given you, and the writing's on the wall here. And so I know it was a big part. And I even got a text from them
Wow. It's unbelievable.
Saying that we, you know, you always have such a special place in our hearts. And I didn't even respond. Yeah. I'm like, whatever.
No, and I've had that too.
Did you feel like it was a little like, you don't get to show up. If you want to exit, fucking exit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have that with family members, you know, that I haven't talked to or that weren't around, and they came out of the woodwork. And that was a really big, big learning curve for me, and brought up a lot of pain.
Oh, yeah.
And but it was like, no, you don't get to show up now. Like, you don't get to hang out with me now, when you never, you know, I didn't see you growing up at all, and you weren't in my life. Like, no.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I say all that. I mean, it's more funny than anything. I'm making,
what about
I'm
the new girlfriends? How many new girlfriends are there now?
Well, you know, I went through, there's so many people on Instagram that have written DMs, you know, and but they're like really heartfelt DMs.
Sweet. You say written DMs. I think it's called sliding into your DMs.
No, these are like people that are like, they're telling me how this song and story is like meant to me. And if I have 30 minutes where I'm like not doing nothing, if I can respond back, I think it's really incredible. Like, I'm friends with, the nephew of, Senior Bush. Right. And he talked about how he wrote, he literally wrote like 100 letters a day. And if you wrote to him, he wrote back. He always wrote back, even during his busiest of times. Right. And I'm like, man, that's so incredible. Mm-hmm. I want to be like that. Yeah. Like, because really it's a human being connecting.
I try to write back a lot. I do.
Yeah.
But
there's also some other things in there. I'm like,
well, yes. Yeah. The other ones I screenshot and save, because Dave and I were going to pitch like a little teaser show about me just doing a little comedy bit about like, okay, how not to get a date on Instagram.
On Instagram. And,
you know, whether it's those pictures or the most insane, like dirtiest, most, it's shocking. It's just shocking. But the nice ones, I always try to write back.
Yeah. 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 So anyways, things have definitely, Jimmy definitely made things more interesting. I'll just say that much. You know?
Are you going to tour as soon as you possibly can? And like,
I mean, as soon as we can, I would love to.
Are you dying to now?
Yeah, because, you know, the energy that's around this album and my music makes things so different than going out and it feels like you are pulling a huge ball like up the mountain, you know? Yeah. And it feels on some level that it's kind of starting to go down, and there's, you just kind of need to stay up with it, you know, which is such a gift.
Were you touring a lot before this happened? Were you playing out a lot?
Well, no, because, you know, it had been so much time since between my last
the album
release,
was like a year, right?
Yeah. Oh. So, you know, I wasn't doing a lot of touring, I mean, the year before, I think I'd probably maybe played 40. No, I bet I probably played 20, 25 dates, and I went out. I opened up with for my friends. This band called Joseph, who, if you've not heard of them, they're absolutely incredible.
Okay.
It's three sisters, and they're wildly good. And I went and I opened up like 12 shows for them. But outside of that, I really didn't. I did a lot of therapy. I did a lot of other kind of work.
Me too. That was my big year. That one big year, I swear to God, my therapy bills, man. I was like, and then I remember saying to my therapist, like, you know, no wonder why I'm broke. I mean, I've been coming to you for 20 years. When is this going to work? Like, when am I going to get this? But I couldn't, I mean, I'm such a fan of that and self-exploration, and especially songwriting. Like you said, I mean, I'm sure you're the same. I was the mixtape queen. And, you know, in the 80s, I made everyone a mixtape, and, you know, every boy I liked, there was specific tapes and each
song. Yeah. And I made them for my girlfriends.
They yeah, every all... person. And then, of course, I had to write like what each song meant. And I actually still have the box. I found the box.
No way.
My mom saved, yeah, a box of them. But that was therapy. That is therapy, music and lyrics for me.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I think music saved my life as a kid.
Also, your Wikipedia says The Cure is one of your biggest influences. You know, I'm the biggest Cure fan ever.
I'm a massive.
Oh my God, that's so awesome! Cure fan.
But I, awesome. You know, but like I grew up, I would go down the street listening to the Beastie Boys, The Cure,
yes.
Merle Haggard, you know, Alabama, and then like I was born in Kansas City, and when I was 9, moved to Tampa, Florida. So they had like this very Florida specific like dance music. And then I would listen to like dance music all at the same time. And I was like, oh yeah, it's way cool. I'm down, you know? So
I love that. Cause your music is so, you have, it's so many things put together so beautifully. You could tell that you have a lot of influences.
Yeah. I think we all do.
I'm so excited that I got to talk to you. Can we be friends on Instagram?
I promise.
I won't DM Please. You like naked Please. Pictures. I promise.
I hope we get to hang out. And have dinner.
I would love to. And if you ever need any backup singing at anything, I'll do anything.
So. All right.
Dave was going to set up the computer in front of either the guitars or the gallery wall. I was a little intimidated by the guitars. I was like, maybe I shouldn't do the guitars.
I do like the gallery wall. I really do. I've been looking at some of the things. Fleetwood Mac Rumors, the Pearl Jam.
That's an original poster. That's his favorite band. So
really,
yeah, we're big music people in this house. So we're fans.
If you could have helped write any song, what song?
Oh God, anything by Fleetwood Mac. Anything by Fleetwood Mac, honestly, Led Zeppelin, anything Led Zeppelin. God, I see now I'm drawing a blank that you're asking me that. Or any Depeche Mode.
There's not like a song that over your life, you're like, I've probably listened to that.
Everlong, Foo Fighters.
that's awesome. Everlong by the Foo Fighters.
How about
you? I need to go listen to it.
If you could see any artist in any era of time, even like time travel, pick one. Who would it be? Most of all.
Oh man.
Like someone not around.
Oh. I would.
Oh, we stumped you.
Ooh. Yeah.
See, you asked me.
You know what, Marvin Gaye.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's
Marvin Gaye. There's a concert of him, and it's like in this auditorium, but it feels like it's in like. It's like either a really big church auditorium I would give anything to have been in that room. I mean, I think he's been such a teacher.
Yeah, I love Marvin Gaye. I'm such a huge Marvin Gaye fan. And Stevie Wonder. Actually, and I'm wearing this Prince in the Revolution, and shame on me.
I got to see Stevie Wonder at Bonnaroo a few years ago. Oh. Yeah.
God,
mind blown.
I went through that phase of Stevie Wonder only like for a while. I could not get enough. But I was going to say Prince. I mean, talk about song I wish I could have helped write. Duh, Purple Rain. I mean, like just to be in the room. I mean, that kills me that he's gone. That's just bumps.
Right. It's just, what's really incredible about the whole album is he wrote and performed everything on it.
I know every single thing that people don't realize that. And especially young kids now, you know, now listen to us young kids today. But he wrote and he played everything and did everything and produced everything. Like,
yeah, well, no, the people do. There's a guy named, he goes by the name Tame Impala. Mm-hmm. I'm a massive fan. And I mean, his records are brilliant.
Dave is shaking his head. Do I need to listen to this?
Oh, and okay. He engineers, mixes, plays everything, does all of it. So there's definitely people out there that are still.
You've so inspired me today, Thad. Really, thank you so much.
Oh, likewise. Thank
you. You're so inspirational. I really want everyone to go out and get your album. And where can they find you on Instagram and stuff?
Well, my Instagram is just, if you Google or do search Thad Cockrell, mm-hmm. And you can find my music anywhere. Yeah.
It's on the charts.
It's on the charts,
baby.
You can stream it. It helps a lot more if you buy it.
No, guys, please buy it. Seriously.
It's true. It's like
I'm a little lowly musician over here.
Not just for me, but if there's music that you love, buy it streaming is window shopping, and a business can't stay open with people just window shopping. You have to go in.
And luckily for me, that Garden State came out one of those really rough years before everything was totally streaming, because that was 2005. And I got to say, I couldn't believe it got me through. So I can vouch for like people buy music, support musicians, support this man.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Can't wait to meet you in person. I really
Likewise. Really great to meet you both.
Really great to meet you. Thank you so much. Is that guy not amazing or what? I swear to God, I really truly could have, I'm not kidding you. I could talk to him all day. So inspiring, so positive, and so real and honest and supportive and a true artist. And just, again, you just don't know. You don't know where your second act is going to be, or your third or your fourth or your fifth or whatever. But he so inspired me, and I'm so honored that I got to talk to him. And there's a link to his song in the show notes, so you can find his song on the podcast or go to iTunes. Look up Thad Cockrell. Honestly, support him. Buy his album. He's fucking awesome. And thank you for supporting me. Speaking of which, now I have to make it about me. Download and subscribe. Tell all your friends. And please don't forget, leave me that review and 5 stars, because that's the only way I can keep doing this, because I really want to keep interviewing people like this. And you can follow me on Instagram. The podcast is second_act_podcast. And then me, I am BONZ Somerville on Instagram, or my name. And please write me, send me your thoughts, whatever. I'm super interested in hearing what you guys have to think, and hope that you love this as much as I do. And Thad, you're awesome. You are so fucking awesome and inspiring. Thank you for inspiring me. And I hope y'all are inspired as well. And I will see you soon. I don't know.